Excelsior, and welcome once again, true believers, to another installment of Zach and Tavy's Marvelous Adventure, where we have been going through the Marvel Cinematic Universe from the beginning and learning all about it and sharing the knowledge of that. I am Zach Walliner.
And I'm Tavy Phillips.
And we are here now on a new episode talking about a bit of a departure from a lot of what's come before. What film are we talking about today, Tavy?
Today, we are talking about Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's right, Guardians of the Galaxy, where it's really, for the first time, I feel, going further with the science fiction vibe.
Oh, yeah.
Thor, Asgard, you're a little bit in that, but it's still that sort of mythological gods and things
right.
Presented. Oh, it's technology and science, but it seems like magic. But this is full on.
Pure sci-fi adventure, like as sci-fi as you could get.
Yeah.
Well, let me just say it. This is my favorite of the ones we've watched so far. I loved this movie.
I would actually
call this a movie that I'm glad I saw this movie even outside of this project. And I did not know I was going to love it this much. I probably should have known because I really enjoyed the theme park rides. That already gives me a little bit of an
incentive. Right, you do have that exposure. Yeah.
But the movie was just a total fun romp. And like you say, it's really sci-fi. I happen to like sci-fi. I was raised by science fiction nerds, so maybe that's part of was already geared to like it. But it's also, it's got just lots of references and things almost feel like it was specifically designed to appeal to my generation or something. I think when it came out, it was 2014. I think I was the same age as Chris Pratt's character was supposed to be in 2014.
Okay.
I think it was supposed to be about 34 based on like the years and stuff. So I don't know. As soon as I saw the kid with the 1988 Walkman, I was like, yeah.
There you go.
This is my vibe.
Yeah, so this even starts off before we even see a Marvel logo or anything. You see a title card saying Earth 1988. So it's setting the scene, it's setting the location and the time. There are a lot of title cards in this one to keep track of where and when we are. So
I appreciated that because they do sort of ask, they don't ask too much of you in terms of plot. The plot is very easy to follow, but they ask a little bit of you in terms of, we're going to throw a bunch of new names, character types, alien types, places at you, and you need to keep up. So the title cards were very appreciated.
Well, that's good that they helped with that.
Yeah.
What'd you think of that beginning scene, that sort of prologue?
It freaking bummed me out really badly,
right.
But I got past it. I powered through. Made me cry, and then we kept going, and so I knew laughs were coming, and they did come. So yeah, that was a rough start.
It was
that
pretty was heavy.
Like, that was just like the beginning of Up. I don't know if you saw Up.
Oh yeah.
Very similar vibe to that, but it worked out. It worked out. It started in an emotional place, and then it paid off later.
Definitely.
It didn't do that for no reason. I appreciate that.
It definitely helped shape Peter and a lot of what he cares about and what he's about that we see later on. I did notice there's a whole crowd around her in that hospital room, his mother.
He has a lot of family.
I was like, is this all family? Who is all this? They always say when someone passes away, oh, they were surrounded by family. I always wonder how that is, that the family knows to be there then and surrounding them.
Second.
And it's almost like there's a countdown. They're waiting for it to happen just so that they could be there for it. I don't know.
Yeah, and I thought that grandfather was going to play a bigger role. They faked me out with the grandfather. I was like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. This is a good grandpa figure. Glad this guy's here. Oh, never see him again.
Yeah, then again, right away, no, he's forever. Taken up in a spaceship, Peter.
But you know what? It's important that we see that. He lost his mom, but he does still have loving people in his life that he is now being removed from. I think that's an important thing for them to show us, too.
True.
Like it's not like he had nobody in the world, and it doesn't matter if a gang of pirates kidnaps you or wherever, gang kidnaps you in a spaceship. Like, he actually had a family still.
Yeah, so it is something he's leaving behind in Earth when he's being taken away. So it's not just like, well, I've got nothing here. I don't care if I go anywhere. My mom's dead, so I might as well just go away.
Right.
So that's a good point. So I will say, interestingly, I'm sure there's no way you would have caught this, but his mother is one of the early instances of an MCU actor having played two roles.
Oh, who else have we seen her before in our journey?
Yes, that's Laura Haddock, and we had a brief, I think, silent moment, or maybe she said one word, like, hi, in the montage of Captain America doing the USO tours. At one point, he's walking, signing things for kids, and then there's this cute blonde, and they make eye contact, and he kind of notices her and smiles. That's the same woman who plays Peter Quill's mother.
Nice.
So, little fun.
They liked her. They brought her back.
And, of course, then this led to nerds being like, oh, Captain America is really his...
Okay.
Great grandfather or something.
Okay, nerds.
Yeah, it's a,
sure.
It's a bit much after a point, even for a guy like me. Now, as always, We like to play games here, and our most favorite game of all is
Spot the Stan.
I love cameos.
Where we see if you were able to catch Stanley's classic cameo. So did you see him in this one? Did you spot the
Stan? I spotted the Stan, Zach. I spotted him indeed. He was on Xandar? Xandar.
I believe it was.
On the planet, the Tomorrowland-looking planet, which I also appreciated very much. He was spotted in the binoculars of our friend Rocket Raccoon, who's looking for marks or something.
Yes.
And he bopped this sort of sleazy old guy hitting on a much younger woman. And I believe he called him a Class A prevert.
Something along those lines.
Yeah.
So very
good. I spotted him.
You caught him.
I'm going to be really sad when we get to the movies in a post-Stan Lee.
Yeah.
When did Stan leave us again?
It was probably 2018, 2019, because the last one he shows up in, I believe, is Avengers Endgame.
Okay. So we have a few more.
We've got a lot
to
more.
To enjoy our friend Stan, because I love this game.
We've got years and years of cameos to try to spot. So yeah, it's a funny little jokey thing, like he's an old man flirting with a younger woman. There was actually, I think, an alternate idea at a point where I saw, I think they just took a picture of a body double doing it, but where he was going to be in a case at the collector's sort of museum.
That would have been fun.
So.
That would have been fun. This is funny. This one.
Yeah, it's got that humor. You hear him a little. It's not as much where he has one of his one-liners, but it's a cute moment.
Yeah.
And on the note of games, we also enjoy a bit of Marvel trivia. So I always like to get it out of the way early because I don't want to duplicate any talking points and I don't know any better than you about what's going to be on the cards. So let's just dive right in.
Do it.
This is a specific thing. Let's see if you were paying attention. What percent of a plan does Quill claim to have before trying to reclaim the orb from Ronan?
12%.
Hey, all right. You got it. Good. Good.
It was a funny concept. That he said he had a plan and it turned out to be 12% of the plan.
I was just going to say, that's a very good scene. That's sort of when they first come together as the Guardians of the Galaxy. He says they're losers, but he's not saying it in a pejorative way. He says they've all lost something. And they stand around in the circle, but then it's undercut by remarks by Rocket where he's like, okay, we're all standing.
Bunch of idiots standing in a circle.
Yeah.
He says something like that, like a bunch of jerks standing in a circle.
Yeah.
Oh, well, let's get it out of the way then. That accent, man. That Bradley Cooper was doing as Rocket. What was that? Excuse me. What was that? That was very annoying.
You had a
this
problem.
Was my
with
big,
it?
This was my beef with the movie. I love this movie. I hated that accent.
Really?
I was like, what does this space raccoon sound like all the guys I grew up with in like Bensonhurst in the 80s? At the neighborhood at the getting a slice?
Yeah, it's kind of like a New York tough guy kind of thing.
New York tough guy thing.
I think it's
you know what? It grew on me as not the act. I mean, it became more tolerable as the movie progressed because he's a very lovable character.
Mm-hmm.
So once you start loving somebody, their little quirks become endearments rather than annoying. But at first, I was like, this accent, come on. Then I looked it up. Bradley Cooper's from like Philly. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? You making fun of New York? What are we doing?
Yeah. So,
anyway, had to say it.
But I think he does a good performance because I forget that Rocket is Bradley Cooper.
He's definitely doing
a different voice, and that character is embodied. And some people, they do a voice in movies, and it just sounds like them.
Yeah.
So
he was at least doing something. He was creating a complete character, doing a character voice, took the whole voice actor thing very seriously. Did he do any motion? Like, it's a little raccoon. He couldn't have done any kind of motion for it, could he?
Sean Gunn, James Gunn's brother, who appears in this as one of the Ravagers, he's like the second in command to Yondu, he was doing the motion capture.
I noticed the name in the credits, I will say. I was like, oh, I spy a Nepo baby.
Nepo brother.
That's not fair. A Nepo brother, so that's fine. Good. Yeah, he did a good job.
He does put him in things.
If I'm not mad at Clint Howard, I'm not mad at Sean Gunn.
Yes,
I'm not
Sean
mad at Sean Gunn.
Me and Penny actually met him at a con.
Ooh.
A year or two ago. Actually, that con's coming up this weekend. We're seeing about going. It was funny. I mentioned to him how we're both brothers of directors and we had that in common. So it's
nice.
Kind of
funny. Oh, that's right. I didn't think about that little parallel.
I haven't really been in Jason's professional works, but that's okay.
Well, nobody can accuse you of being Clint Howarded.
There you go. All right. We're only one question down. We got to move.
Oh, dear. Let's keep going.
Which two siblings fight each other aboard the Dark Aster?
Oh, I mean, I guess the only siblings we meet, right? Let me get their names. Nebula and Gamora.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's not a lot of siblings to choose from.
Don't remember any more siblings, so it's got to be them.
That's them. And I think at one point, Nebula says, of all our siblings, you're the one I hated the least, or something like that.
Yeah.
So it implies that there are there. Others.
Yeah.
Who is the only guardian able to understand Groot?
Oh, Rocket.
Yes.
It's very amusing. They have whole conversations. I am Groot, I am Groot, I am Groot. And he's saying different things every time he says it.
Yes.
It's funny.
What are Groot's three final words? I was just going to mention this because everything he says is, I am Groot, until the very end.
We are Groot.
Yes. And,
I'm not going to lie, a little tear came out my eye. What a scene.
I will tell you 100% honest to God, in the theater when I first saw this, I knew he's going to say, we are Groot. And he said
nice. You predicted it. You know, you can't live in the culture and go to Disney World a lot the way that I have without knowing a little bit, like, that Groot exists, that Groot's a thing, that Groot dies and is reborn as a little bitty baby. So, of course, I went in knowing that, knowing he was going to die. And I still teared up when the sacrifice came. It was a beautiful scene.
Yes.
Really loved it.
Nice. That's Vin Diesel doing that voice performance. And so he was in the studio saying those three words in all sorts of ways. And he did it in other languages too for different dubs.
Oh, nice.
He wanted to do it himself. So I give him credit for that.
Like, you know what? He has
yo
a
soy Groot.
Yeah, that's cute. He has a very distinctive, very deep voice. And I can imagine it might have been tricky to find voice actors in other languages that had that same deep timbre, resonant voice, that very distinctive Vin Diesel voice. So good for him for doing the other languages. It's not a huge challenge either, I'm sure. It's
sure.
Just a few words, but still, we appreciate sure. that.
Did you ever see Iron Giant?
Yes, I love Iron Giant.
He did
That's
that.
That's a favorite. Yep.
He did that robot, so maybe that was an influence in James Gunn casting him. Because
yeah, I can see that for sure. A similar sort of self-sacrificing, big, strong, silent-y. Not quite silent type, but almost silent type.
Yeah, and good vocal comparison.
Resonance. Yeah.
How does Quill distract Ronan in their final confrontation?
He does a little dance party, like History of Dance, though. My favorite was the Running Man. When he started doing the Running Man, I bust out laughing. That's so specifically my childhood. It was very, very amusing.
Yeah, he does a dance.
And he's like, I'm distracting you.
Yeah, he eventually gets to admitting that. I'm watching that scene, and again, it's one of these little nitpicks, but it's a funny moment, and he's doing this dancing in front of this sort of alien warlord with this massive hammer with an infinity stone in it, and he's doing this, and it's silly, and it confuses him, and he's like, what are you doing? But then he's still standing there just looking at him, questioning, like, you've got this mallet with this thing. You don't want this guy. You just whack him.
Just smack him.
He just is so confused that he takes his time being confused until the distraction plays out and he loses the mallet.
It was a masterful use of chaos by Peter Quill.
Mm.
I mean, using chaos as a defensive weapon, that you could think of worse ways to do it in a little dance party.
True, true. What is the name of the prison where Peter Quill, Rocket, Groot, Gamora, and Drax are kept?
Nope. I've got no freaking clue. Did they say it? I have no clue.
It may have been said, but it was definitely one of those on-screen title cards. You should have been
paying. And I took notes for the title cards, but I guess I didn't take notes for that one.
All right, when you're
because
baking,
I'm looking.
When you're baking clay, what do you put it in?
A kiln?
Yes, it was the kiln.
Oh, the kiln. Okay, there it is. There it is.
Though it's spelled differently, I think.
Didn't write that one down.
K-Y-L-N.
And of course, it was one of the questions on the test, so write them all down.
I don't know if you noticed, there's another cameo in there. When they're all kind of walking into the main area with all the prisoners and they're all giving them looks and screaming and throwing things, at one point it cuts to this crew up top looking down, and there's like an old man who I think if you didn't know better, you'd be like, he looks a little out of place. You know Troma?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
What, Lloyd film. Kaufman, the guy who basically runs Troma, I guess.
Oh, is that who that was?
Because I think James Gunn kind of got his start doing work for him.
I remember the scene because I remember thinking we're all adept at reading the visual language of movies at this point in our lives. So I knew the camera was lingering on that group for a reason, but I had no idea who they were.
Right.
Like, I bet Zach will tell me what that is.
Yeah, I remember I caught that cameo in there because he just stood out as a sore thumb to me. And I was like, is that the guy? I think it is. The big blue alien who confronts them and then Gru ends up shoving twig fingers up his nose. That's yeah. a vocal cameo from Nathan Fillion.
Oh, I had no idea. I love Nathan Fillion.
Yeah, him and Gunn are buddies and he puts them in stuff. So
fabulous.
That was that. What item does Peter Quill steal from the planet Morag?
The orb containing the Infinity Stone.
Yes, the orb / Infinity Stone is the answer.
The MacGuffin one. Orb of the movie.
Yeah, not hard to remember that one.
Right.
What three things does Rocket say he needs to break out of the prison?
Well, I mean, very memorably, the artificial leg of one of the prisoners, some battery thing behind a panel in the wall. What was the third thing? What's going on? I don't know. What was the third thing?
A guard's armband.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So, yeah, then you find out he didn't need the leg after all. Where
he didn't need the leg, though. He just thought it was
paint
funny.
The guy off. It's just funny. The guy's confused. You need my leg? It's just one of these silly moments in there, but it just shows something else about Rocket's character where he likes messing around and he seems to like prosthetics because it comes back later where he's like, I'm going to need that guy's eye.
Oh,
no, you don't. Yes. Like, no, was... yeah, I really do. And he's holding back laughter.
That's a very funny callback.
Yeah. Which of the Guardians of the Galaxy is also known as the Destroyer?
Drax.
Drax the Destroyer. Yep, that's what he was long known as in the comics. Drax in this movie is actually quite different from Drax in the comics. Here he's of an alien race, and that's why he looks that way. And Ronan killed his family, where I believe it's Thanos in the comics. Or at least Drax was sort of made to kill Thanos. Here, he's out for Ronan. And then at the end, you kind of get the hint of the true origin of the comics where he's like, well, Ronan was just a pawn. Now I have to go kill Thanos. He makes that line. In the comics, he was actually a human originally. And I think him and his daughter die in a car crash. And then he's recreated as this big, green, strong guy. Gunn wanted to take a different approach. He's this alien where he takes everything literally.
Yeah. That was fun. That was a fun element where he couldn't understand metaphor or sarcasm or anything like that.
Quill's running his finger across his throat, and he's like, why would I do that to him? Or he takes everything literal. Oh, it's going to go over his head. Nothing would go over my head. I would catch it.
I admit that I thought it was a little curious that he mentioned that the name of his wife and daughter that were killed. And I figured that must have been an Easter egg for comic book people because they didn't show up later in the movie. In fact, I was looking out for them. At one point, I was like, oh, that Karina, maybe that's his daughter. That wasn't his daughter. She did die after all. Like, there was no deeper meaning to it. He just happened to mention their names.
Right. I don't know if the names come from the comics at all or they're purely a creation of James Gunn in this movie to give him that family and to make it where, you know, when someone wants revenge on someone, they want you to remember their names and all that.
Their
names,
yeah. Thing.
Very kind of.
That's all that it was. I was so looking for clues and more tricks, but no, it was pretty straightforward. Because
I've got you looking too deep sometimes for extra meaning.
I'm looking for meaning everywhere. Yep.
What type of book does Peter Quill use as an insult for Drax during the prison escape?
What kind of book? What kind of book does he use as an insult?
I don't remember him using it as an insult, book. But it did come up and book. Drax acts like offended by it.
Aww.
It's a type of book specifically. It's not a given book. It's a reference material book.
Oh, thesaurus, of course. I'm not a thesaurus. Don't call me a thesaurus. Because he does use a lot of big words. Or seemingly kind of a dumb guy. They're all seemingly kind of a dumb guy at certain points. But they're not. None of them are actually unintelligent.
Sure. This brings me to something. I don't know if it's going to come up in one of the other questions. But you can pick up that Quill, almost Tony Stark-like, gives out some nicknames. So if this was thesaurus was his, he calls Groot Giving Tree
at one point. Right.
And Rocket Ranger Rick.
Yes, so, I remember Ranger Rick. I forgot about Giving Tree. That's very funny.
So he's got some pop culture references from whatever time he spent in his youth as a kid on Earth before he was taken.
I appreciate those too. A little bit of a grounding element to a super sci-fi alien kind of story where we're all over the place. Like, here's a guy from Earth. He's making references that we understand. He's listening to music that we know. It really was good to tie the audience into this journey we're being taken on.
Exactly. On that note, what did you think of the music overall?
Great. Loved it. Love the soundtrack. Super fun, super recognizable tune. I mean, they're all like crowd pleasingly recognizable tunes from the generation like just before mine. So very recognizable to me as someone growing up with people who listen to all that music, just like Peter did.
Sure. Yeah, Gunn is kind of known for his, I guess they're called needle drops in his movies, where music is very important to him. I was kind of nervous when the new Superman movie came out, because now he's over at DC running the show.
And
he wrote and directed Superman, the first big entry point of their new universe. And I was worried he's going to have a soundtrack like this in Superman, where Superman, I feel it should be more score. And it was in that movie, it's more score, but there are some song moments. And one of them, I've had a hard time getting this song out of my head. And it's also because it's been present in social media in reaction to the movie, because there's a moving scene where a particular song is playing. And this song, I've listened to it since then a bunch. And also just because I'd scroll TikTok and there it is.
Everywhere.
So yeah, he's pretty good at that.
He did a great job.
Yes, definitely. What is the name of Peter Quill's ship?
The Milano.
Yes. Do you know why it's called that?
No. I was wondering, did they say?
They don't, but it's Alyssa. Okay. Alyssa Milano. He named
it. Hilarious. I was like, it's either he really likes those cookies.
The cookies.
Or he's just, the bus fan.
So I just picked up some of those at Costco today, actually.
Delicious.
The double dark chocolate gets me every time.
Yeah, that's the real thing.
In which year is Peter Quill abducted from Earth? We addressed this, but go ahead.
1988.
That's correct. Whose criminal record with the Nova Corps notes that he tends to bite? I think that should be obvious.
I mean, is it the raccoon?
Yes, Rocket.
Rocket. This during the scene where that fun exposition scene where the Nova, what are they called? What are they? Nova Corps. So those, they're like the two opera. What are they called? Cops? The Nova.
I guess. Corpsmen? I don't know how you say that.
Corpsmen? Okay. Well, the two Corpsmen are going through the records of the new prisoners, and right, so that must have been
right. So we see them sort of in the lineup thing. It's not a full lineup, but each one of them has their turn, and then you see stuff on screen in the readouts, graphics about them each. And yeah, right. We have a few interesting stars in there. We have John C. Reilly.
And every scene with John C. Reilly was comic gold, as per usual.
And Peter Serafinowicz.
Well, that's who that was. Okay, he was familiar looking.
The voice of Darth Maul in The Phantom Menace.
Is that right?
He does the voice in The Phantom Menace, episode one of Star Wars.
And is he the one that says the line, "What a bunch of a-holes"?
Yes. That's from that scene. So that was a memorable quote as well.
On that topic, it's a bunch of coarse language in this one, I noticed. Like a little bit more than
usually
used to. Yeah. Not terrible, but definitely a little coarse. A little coarse here and there.
Definitely. What is the name of the tape Peter Quill has in his cassette player?
Awesome Mix.
Specifically, right. Awesome Mix Volume 1.
Volume 1, of course. Yes.
Who abducts Peter Quill from Earth?
Oh, what's Yondu? Yondu? Yondu?
Yondu.
Yondu.
Yes.
Yondu and the Ravagers, my favorite Ravagers. Band.
Yes. Yes, Yondu is very different from his comic counterpart as well. I guess James Gunn decided to take it with some creative liberties. In the comics, Yondu is actually part of the original team that was called the Guardians of the Galaxy, which I think are from the 70s. This team of this incarnation, along with some other characters, they were from a relatively recent group taking on that name at the time this movie came out. There was, I think it was in this comic event called Annihilation, where the new Guardians of the Galaxy were formed with all five of these main characters as well as some others. So he's sort of a tie to that original group, but the whole thing where he's sort of this southern, yo boy, you know, with his bad teeth and everything, sort of rednecky.
Yeah.
I think that's purely
another confusing accent for a science fiction character. We got a rock him from Bensonhurst and a blue pirate from like the southeastern south of the United States. But okay, why not? Yeah,
it's definitely a choice.
Yep.
By what other name is Peter Quill known?
Star-Lord.
Yes, as much as
he wanted to make that known.
He gets that callback at the end where he mentions that he's Star-Lord in the beginning with the guy. I think his name is Korath. And he's like, who? And later on, Star-Lord. Oh, finally.
Yeah, it was a nice little wrap up there. Korath, played by
Jaimon Hansu.
Hansu, or as I like to call him, Amistad. I kept saying to myself, because I'm here by myself this weekend, I kept saying out loud to myself, ooh, Amistad's back. Oh, hi, Amistad.
It's one way to remember him.
Yep.
How many, okay, this might be a tricky one, but it is multiple choice. How many thousand units is the bounty that Yondu places on Quill's head? 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, or 40,000?
40,000. I remembered it.
Good, good job. You got it.
Because it gave us a bit of scope, a bit of scale to compare against the amount of money they were trying to get for the orb.
Right.
When they decided to team up. 40,000 as a bounty on one guy versus 4 billion of the same denomination of, I couldn't remember what the word units, and I kept thinking of them as space bucks, because the movie Spaceballs, they have right. Space bucks there, but units. So 40,000 seems like a lot until you hear, oh, there's 4 billion. It's right. Just a different value of things, of the currency.
Definitely.
Stuck out.
Who is also known as Subject 89P13?
Oh, geez. Rocket?
That's correct.
Because he was an experiment.
Yeah, you kind of get a little hint of where he came from. He talks about, he kind of has an impassioned speech talking about being poked and prodded and things. And at one point where they're getting changed in the prison, you see stuff on his back mm-hmm. in there and kind of get a hint of where he's been and what he's about.
They do a good job of creating sympathy and depth for what seems like a very cutesy looking, funny, silly, wisecracking character. You get a lot of emotional range from this character. You get backstory that makes sense and has heft to it. I appreciated that.
Yes, and not to give anything too much away, but there's more to come. I'll just say
there better be, because there are some mysteries left at the end of this, at least one big mystery in my mind at the end of this movie.
We'll get there.
I guess we'll get to
later. There. As the Guardians depart Xandar after defeating Ronan, who starts dancing in a plant pot? Who could it be in a plant pot?
Who could that be? Could it be little baby Groot?
That's right, Groot. Baby Groot. It's funny, we had all these little baby characters at a time. Baby Yoda, Baby Groot.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Always a good way to sell merchandise.
Muppet babies.
People so technically, them. That is supposed to be the Groot original, Groot Prime, however you want to say it, his offspring. So it's kind of like he's been reborn, but he's Groot 1 is supposed to be dead. James Gunn.
He really is.
Clear. Okay. So this is a new one, though he seems for all intents and purposes to be just like Groot as things go on.
Actually, that's kind of better. It's kind of better. Part of me wants Groot to be back, but it has more emotional weight. The sacrifice has more meaning if he's actually dead, and this we still get sure. something of him, but it's not him. But
yeah,
I like that narratively.
It is and it isn't, kind of. So you kind of have your cake and eat it too.
I'll take it. Yum, yum.
Who is working with Groot to capture Quill on Xandar, leading to the pair being arrested?
Rocket.
Right. They show, they establish
bounty hunters.
That those two are a team, they are a pair. What color is the Infinity Stone at the heart of the orb?
Purple.
Yes, my favorite.
Very nice.
By what other name is Tanalir Tivan known?
The Collector.
That's right. Speaking of the orb, he kind of...
And I said, ooh, we met him? I couldn't remember what movie we met him in.
It was for the Dark Worlds post-credit scene or mid-credit scene.
Yeah.
Back to another color question. What color, speaking of this character as well, what color is the Collector's hair?
Oh my god.
It's a random one.
What color is the Collector's hair? Is it like platinum black? White? Am I totally off?
It's white, yeah.
It's white, okay. Is that really a color? It's all the colors, right?
Yeah, sure, it's a color.
Sure.
It's an odd detail to put on a trivia.
Yeah, weird to focus on, but okay.
I guess trivia is trivia.
Yep.
What is the name of the planet that the Nova Corps reside on and protect? This came up before.
Xandar.
That's correct. What is the name of the mining colony on which the Guardians meet the Collector?
Is that Nowhere with a K-N-O-W?
That is correct. That is Nowhere.
I wrote, what a stupid name. The severed head of an ancient celestial being. That's a cool concept.
Yes.
A mining colony, and they're mining brain matter of an ancient celestial being. But the name Nowhere is a silly pun, and I don't care for it, sir.
Yeah, I think that's our introduction to the Celestials, which are these massive space gods in Marvel. They're among the top tier of most powerful beings in the Marvel universe. I don't know the exact hierarchy of who might be above them and who might be just below them, but they're really important in the grand cosmic scheme of things. So that's a Celestial died, and that's their head, and they made this mining colony inside of it. And we get a glimpse of another Celestial as well when we get that exposition dump from the Collector, who we were just talking about, where he kind of gives a is the backstory of the Infinity Stones. You see where it's this guy and he's got a massive staff or whatever, and it has the purple one in it, and he wipes out, I don't know if he wipes out the whole planet, but he wipes out a bunch of people on the planet. And it's a cool visual. These are Jack Kirby visual creations, I believe, the Celestials, and their designs are very cool. And so it shows their power, though I just didn't especially like that it's showing it as an example of the power of the stone, because these guys don't need a stone to do these things. These guys are immensely powerful beings, but here they're tying it into the stone. But what did you think of that whole explanation and that whole sequence where we see about the stones?
I really appreciated it as a non-comics reader. In fact, I was taking notes. I was like, ooh, this is important. Let me pause and write down what he just said. And I wrote down, before creation, there were six singularities. Then the remnants of them were forged into ingots known as Infinity Stones. One of them is in the orb. They are ultra-powerful weapons. Huh. It's like I'm scrambling for a test. But I'm starting now. I'm like, ooh, Infinity Stones. I'm getting more info on what those are. Yay.
Yeah, concentrated ingots.
Yeah.
But that, again, goes against what we saw in Thor the Dark World and what he's holding on to. The ether was not an ingot. It was this red goo. And then, like we talked about in that episode, where was the ingot in that case? So it was this red goo, and then it gets crystallized by being zapped by Thor's lightning. But then, so where's the one stone? Also, I don't know why they felt that this change was necessary in the adaptation. They're called Infinity Gems in the comics. Until these movies came along, where I think now they're called stones, because they always carry things over into the comics once they've been in the greater public consciousness from the films and shows. But they were
I have no knowledge about this, but I have a theory about it.
Okay.
Which is that gems are for girls, gem and the holograms, girls, girls, girls. Stones are for boys. What a pair of stones. Stones are manly. Stones are men. This is why I think that they changed
But they
them.
Were, but they were gems in the comics.
That's true. That sort of blows my theory to bits. Oh, well, who knows why they do these weird things? We have to accept so many weird changes, don't we?
Sometimes. Sometimes. So, yeah, we get a bit more of knowledge about these things, and it helps continue the narrative. And of course, this movie actually gives us a lot towards the bigger story, because aside from that little head turn and standing up from the throne and smile we got in the Avengers mid-credits scene, we get a full-on Thanos in this movie. What did you think of him in this?
I was glad to see him, because I've been waiting for that guy to show up. I thought it was just a taste of him, really. He didn't have much to do in this movie, except sort of establish himself as somebody powerful, super powerful, very scary, very intimidating, and a horrible father.
Definitely.
Saying he has a favorite daughter right in front of the other daughter. That is sick. That is sick. It's a good intro to Thanos, but I know there's going to be more. You can tell it just with a whetting of the appetite for this big purple dude.
Yeah, it's a little...
And what is the Mad Titan? Somebody called him the Mad
That's
Titan.
Sort of what he's known as, a nickname for him.
Is that a... Are the Titans something we're supposed to know, or is it just a reference to the, like, was it Greek mythology Titan?
I forget if there's more to it. Let me see. He is a Titan, a fictional race from the Marvel Universe, and the moon of Saturn, Titan, is his homeworld. I thought he's from Titan, but he's called a Titan, so...
That makes sense. It's like Terrans are from Earth, Titans are from Titan.
So he's... I guess it's a title, but it's also true to his species or race.
Right.
So, yeah, this was a whetting of the appetite. Like you said, we see him. We see he's an imposing figure. He's not happy with Ronan diverging from him. You could tell he's mad. They have those sequences where you see a big face, sort of like, it reminded me of the Emperor on the hologram in Empire Strikes Back, when he's sort of giving Vader his orders. And
I wondered if that was almost kind of a visual reference, because there were a few cool visual references in this movie to other movies in this movie that I assume are on purpose. One of them was at the beginning when we first meet Peter as an adult. He's doing this thing in the rain dance through the puddles.
I didn't pick that
up. And it was very funny because it was direct choreography from that movie, very iconic choreography, but he's kicking this like rat creature through the puddle. So it's also irreverent. And then there was definitely, that had to be an E.T. reference near the end when they join hands in the Infinity Cloud thing and Rocket reaches his little paw up to meet Drax, and they do this real briefly, but it was right out of E.T. I don't know if these were
I never thought of that.
I was just like, these are cool, like, ooh, references to movies I like. I like this guy. Anyway, all of which is to say, I also thought of Star Wars when Thanos is projecting himself, largely intimidating me onto Ronan et al.
Yeah,
and his crew.
At first, you see that the other character doing that, where he's talking to Ronan on behalf of Thanos, but we see he's quickly dispatched by Ronan. And I was like, oh, good, because I thought that character was annoying and stupid from the first place, being this in between, and it's something just created for the movie. As far as I know, it was just created for the movie, and I was never fond of that character. So I'm like, okay, good, we're done with him.
Yep.
But it sets the stage. He's trying to get this stone. He's very powerful. Someone refers to him, I think, as like one of the most powerful beings in the universe or something. I was like,
yeah.
I don't know about that, but
they're setting the stage for us to be intimidated and impressed by this.
They're trying to build him up as the big threat. He is a big threat, but relative to the universe, I think that was maybe a little exaggeration.
What did you think of Lee Pace's performance?
He's good.
I think he's really good.
What he gets to do.
Yeah, I think he did a good job at playing a really one-note character. But all I could think was, what a waste of Lee Pace's face. You can't see. And he's a handsome actor that I like to see the face of. It's just all blue makeup and black makeup. Bad. But no, he's good. It was a lot, because he's another actor with a deep voice. So he's doing his deep voice. I am very intimidated. It's a scary guy thing, but he was good.
Did you watch Pushing Daisies?
A little bit. I really loved him in the show Halt and Catch Fire. I think I've mentioned that before. This really nerdy, niche AMC show about the dawn of the internet era.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of it.
I'm sure. Yeah.
But yeah, me and Harry, my brother, really like Pushing Daisies. That's my biggest
favorite
to him.
Yeah.
Just going through the movie a bit, like you mentioned, he's doing that dance. He's kicking things. He grabs a lizard and is using it as a microphone at a point.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of amusing.
Really setting the character up for us really nicely there. And may I just say, although we all know that Chris Pratt is the worst Chris, and I don't know him as a person, but what I've read of him, I don't think I would like him politically. His opinions differ from mine, etc. He did a perfectly fine job embodying this character. I think he does a good quasi-dumb guy that's not really dumb. Guy kind of persona, that's his sort of thing.
Sure.
So it was perfect. I think he hit all the right notes for.
He's definitely good in this role, regardless of anything else.
Sure.
You think of him from what we've heard as a celebrity, or for me, hashtag not my Mario.
Oh, don't. I blocked that out. I don't even want to.
I'm just.
Now I'm mad again.
Not that I ever used that as a hashtag. I just thought it's funny to say it because.
I don't even care that much about Mario, but it's so infuriating.
I was so bugged by
all
that.
All right, I'm against him again. Now I'm mad.
And then Garfield.
He won my favor. Yeah, what the heck?
He's not Mario. He's not Garfield. And then I argued with so many people online about the casting. Oh, they want a name. No, in those movies, Mario is the name. Garfield is the name.
Yeah.
Little kids are not like, please take me to see it because Chris Pratt does the voice.
Yeah, they don't care. The person should disappear into the iconic character.
And especially because these are characters with long established voices.
Yeah.
And it's that Hollywood trend of replacing them once there's a big budget motion picture. And I hate that. I'm a big fan of voice actors and I hate that.
Yeah. Long live Lorenzo Music. I mean, R.I.P. Lorenzo Music, I should say.
Oh, no, he's the one to go by. And when they brought Bill Murray on for those CG live action ones, it made sense. Lorenzo Music did Bill Murray's character in the Ghostbusters.
The real Ghostbusters.
It was full circle.
Exactly right.
That made sense, at least.
Not that I watched that movie, but at least approved of the casting for that exact reason. Because I, too, am a nerd who grew up in the 80s.
Yes, exactly. But we're going off on a tangent. But
we digress.
That's what we can do on our podcast.
That's right. It's our podcast. We can talk about Garfield if we want. Right. So then.
But on the note of Garfield,
There's
other little references to Earth and his pop culture he experienced as a child of the 80s. Early on, when he's on Morag getting the orb, he calls one of the guys a Ninja Turtle. And you see in the ship, you see a little troll doll. He's got an Alf trading card.
Oh, I missed the Alf trading card. Oh, that's great. And don't forget, of course, the legend of Footloose and the great hero, Kevin Bacon.
Yes, he really
very amusing.
Looks up to Kevin Bacon and the story of Footloose. For sure, he mentions the Ark of the Covenant, little Raiders of the Lost Ark mention, and he mentions John Stamos.
Oh, yeah.
So all those little...
What was it? It was the great outlaws, including Billy the Kid, Bonnie and Clyde, and John Stamos.
Exactly.
Sure.
We haven't really...
Glenn Close called somebody a pro... Like, I'm not going to say it, but there's some coarse language. I was just... Yes. I mean, I wasn't shocked. I was scandalized. I kept thinking, that's watching this with Penny. Watch your mouth, people.
Well, in fairness, she did see Deadpool and Wolverine with me.
Okay, you know what? She's fine.
That is... Penny hates cursing, generally speaking. She's not a fan of cursing, and there's also bloody violence in the film. But there was something about Deadpool and Wolverine that overrode all of her distaste for foul language and violence. And on that note, why don't we kick it off to Penny's Corner for something along the lines of what she appreciated about that movie. Penny?
Hi, my name is Penny, and welcome back to Penny's Corner. And today we're going to be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy. And my fun fact is that we can see a dog in the collector's case, and also at the end credits, you can also see the dog again licking the collector. So I just wanted that to be my fun fact because I really love dogs, and that's why I want to mention it. See you next time. Bye!
Yes, that we did get to see that dog in there. Penny loves dogs. So that, when it came to Deadpool and Wolverine, the fact that there was a dog in the film, that just outweighed all the
cursing. Is there a dog in that? I haven't seen that one.
It's a good, we'll get there someday.
I'm sure we will.
She wanted to see the dog in that one, and she was happy to see the dog in this one. In the collector's case, we see a dog wearing a space suit.
Dog, I called it in my notes. I was very excited to see space dog. Yes, I don't know why. I don't know who that dog is, but I loved it.
We see it in there initially, just in the case. And then after everything goes kablooey, you kind of see it run free. And then we revisit it once again, like Penny said, during the post-credits scene where we see it run up and lick the collector's face. And we get a little commentary from initially an off-screen voice before the reveal of Howard the Duck.
Yes, yeah.
We get Howard the Duck brought into the MCU here. I believe if you know that he's there and you look, you can see him in the background earlier on.
Oh, how funny.
But if you don't know, you probably miss it. There's a lot of stuff going on. I don't know. Did you catch any of what was in his other cases?
Not really. And I definitely didn't notice Howard the Duck. So Howard's been collected, huh?
It seems.
Dang.
But among the other things he has in his collection, in a case, you see a dark elf from Thor, the Dark World.
Oh, dark elves. Yeah. I know
you
them.
See a Chitauri,
right,
from the invading alien army of the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I've ever seen these, but I believe there are some sort of snake creatures from one of James Gunn's earlier films called Slither. So he worked those in as a little Easter egg for his own work. And then you also see that pink girl who I guess was the previous servant of the collector before he has a new pink girl. And then that girl sees the power of the purple stone and she's drawn in by it, even as he just said about how people can't
handle it.
And even a group tried and they were all destroyed and she still goes for it. It's like, were you not paying attention, idiot?
Yeah, that scene bummed me out, mostly because collector is into slavery. Gross. And so to me, I read it as this person won't be a slave anymore. But she doesn't care what the stone does to her. She either wants to be real powerful or she wants to be blown up. So it was a little bit of a bummer scene to me.
Yeah, now that you mention it, maybe she knew that was going to happen and she just wanted out of the...
She wanted out. He was making fun of her. He was like, use your elbows, scrub, or else I'd be mad. Like, what's the matter with you? Why are you like this, collector? But they're not nice people.
But that does bring me to another one of my nitpicks. Because in the comics, the Infinity Gems... gathering them and especially having all of them on the glove that becomes the Infinity Gauntlet, it allows anybody to have this immense power. But for this universe, they're saying you have to already be a very powerful being to even handle one of them. It defeats the purpose of being able to collect these things and then do whatever you want, whoever you are, to have this all-powerful collection of things from, in the case of the movies at least, the beginning of the universe. Here, you have to already be on a certain power level in order
maybe
to
maybe it's degrees of power. It's like you might think you're powerful now, but where do you get this glove? Which, P.S., first time we've mentioned this glove. I did kind of know there was a glove because it's like in the culture, but makes sense to me. But still, yeah, I guess like if you have a glove, you're going to be really powerful. You think you're powerful? You don't know powerful.
Yeah, the glove is just a means to have all of them in one place, really. But I think I mentioned how it's a blink and you miss a thing in Odin's treasure room in the first Thor. They walk past it and it's fully assembled, which obviously doesn't add up with us now seeing stones hither and thither. So it was a cool thing to get people excited. Oh my God, it's the Infinity Gauntlet. They're going to go for that storyline when we first saw it there, where you would have thought, oh, so now Thanos is going to somehow get it from Odin's treasure room. But now they went in a different direction. The stones are scattered all about. So that doesn't make sense that it's there. Though in the end, eventually they do address that with a little bit of a retcon. But yeah, so I just didn't like that idea that you need to have that power level already, because the whole point is anyone could have it and use it to their whim and empower themselves with it. But we'll see more of that later as the story of the Infinity Saga progresses. We haven't touched too much on Nebula or Gamora, I feel. What did you think of these characters?
I appreciated that these Marvel movies are now firmly in the era of strong, butt-kicking women. intimidating as any of the male characters. Gamora was certainly showing herself to be a force to be reckoned with before even most of the other characters did. Kicking her way through things, throwing people around. So that was cool. I thought it was a little thinly drawn, the sister rivalry relationship. I didn't quite understand why Nebula was there, except to, I guess, check her sister out in space. Which, P.S., that whole scene. That's not how space works. It's just not how space works, but okay, sure. But they're okay. Karen Gillan is capable actor. I've seen her and stuff. She does this sort of action comedy type role well. Yeah, I don't know. I like them. I thought Zoe Saldana was good. Did a good job.
Yeah, I don't remember whether she's referred to as such, but Gamora is known as the deadliest woman in the galaxy or something like that.
It definitely came across. I'm not sure if they said that or not, but it definitely came across. Like, she does not fail.
Yeah, even in her early introduction, where she's going after the orb and Quill, and there's the whole kerfuffle with Rocket and Groot are trying to capture him, and then she's getting away, so they're all kind of fighting each other. She does handle herself pretty well, even when he's got the thing where her legs are tied up, and she gets out of that, and she's got her blades. She ends up actually chopping a bunch at Groot, and she chops his arms off,
right?
Which is another, I don't remember if I told you that that's a thing in phase two, characters losing appendages. I don't know if I mentioned that in a previous one, but you see Malekith, remember his portals?
Yes.
They portals to dismember him. Bucky, we see that flashback where
the arm
being dragged without his arm. So
this
that's
a thing.
Yeah, going back to Star Wars, Kevin Feige, who runs Marvel, is a big Star Wars fan. And so this is like his Empire Strikes Back nod when Luke gets his hand chopped off. So we see a lot of arms being chopped off. And that's just another example of them.
What do you think of Groot as character? I assume they were all comic characters before.
Yes, Groot actually has his origins way, way back, predating the big Marvel Silver Age superhero boom. He was, or at least a version of him, was in these monster comics when that was the big thing, which I think it was Stan Lee and Jack Kirby working on before they hit it with Fantastic Four and then all the other big Marvel title names. So there was a group with all these monsters they would have with these big single syllable names, Thum and this and that. Groot was one of them. And then I guess a creative team decided to pull Groot from obscurity and bring him into the Guardians of the Galaxy. Okay. I don't know if he was brought back sooner than that and he was an active part of Marvel in the superhero era and then he was put into the new Guardians lineup, or that was when he was first brought back. But yeah, he's the talking tree, and just like here in the comics, he just says, "I am Groot." So it's taken right from the pages where Rocket understands him, but all his dialogue is always just, "I am Groot." So that carries
a little bit of a Chewbacca talking to Han.
And that's
Chewbacca
true.
Speaks in Chewbacca language.
That's
and
definitely.
I'm speaking in English.
Shiriwook is Chewbacca language.
Oh, is that one of them? Thank you. Well done.
Non-Marvel nerdy knowledge comes in handy.
If anybody's the breakout star of this franchise, it's got to be Groot. Groot is everywhere. I knew Groot before I knew any of these characters because of the ubiquity of this character. So beloved, so popular. And I can see why. Watching the movie, every scene with him, he's doing something really heroic, really adorable. His eyes sort of sparkle in this way when he does something cute. He's in the grand tradition of, I would almost say, like these noble Disney sidekicks, like Gurgi from the Black Cauldron or Baloo from the Jungle Book. You love them. They're totally lovable and they heroically sacrifice themselves for the greater good. Definitely in that pantheon of lovable sidekicks. And technically now a Disney character because of the whole corporate.
Sure.
Thing. So, but yeah, I'm a sucker. I love them. Great stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
I want one of those little dancing baby groups in a pot now.
I wonder if they made those because they had in like the 90s, they had those toys of the flowers that would dance to music.
Yeah, I'm sure I've seen one.
I would think they'd have had to because they had that play out there. And I don't know if it's fully a mid-credit scene or if it's just as the credits are starting, but we see after he's a little twig that Rocket pulls from the wreckage of the explosion where Groot encircled them with a ball of himself and protected them in the We Are Groot scene. He picks up a little twig and it's just a twig for a little bit, but then you see it starts sprouting out. And then later on, you see it more fully formed in the plant pot. And it's like baby Groot and he's dancing to the Jackson 5.
And P.S., just to, I guess, wrap up the whole soundtrack discussion, they couldn't have picked two better sort of feel-good songs, like feel-good pop songs to end the movie on. If you weren't liking the movie already, and then you hate No Mountain High Enough, and there's a montage of people having a happy ending, and then it goes right into the Jackson 5, and I want you back. Like, these two songs, these are happy, feel-good songs. So masterfully crafted to elicit all the happy emotions in a viewer. Bravo, James Gunn, with your mixtapes. Definitely. Bravo.
Yeah, Groot definitely stands out. He's got the I Am Groot way of talking. He's a big walking tree. And go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying the word ent, because when I think of a big walking tree, I think of Tolkien.
Definitely, yeah. That's another comparison that can be drawn very much, the ents. But now this brings to mind where, you know, me and my stickler for comic accuracy of wanting them to just let the things be the things. I felt after this movie, this should have been a turning point, because if we can accept this talking raccoon and this talking tree and their partners, and the one is the only one who could understand the other one, anything is up for grabs. But I feel even after this point, there's still that, well, we got to be grounded and we got to over explain things. Like, go full comic book, just do it. I feel only more recently, very recently, have they really embraced some comic bookiness, when it's just do the thing. You're making comic book movies, comic book superhero movies. Be comic book superhero-y.
I see what you're saying. That's a very comic book fan point of view. Whereas I, as a dumb non-comic book reader bumbling around, think every time they do these, like, oh, let's ground it in something, I'm like, oh, good, something for me to catch a hold of so I can keep myself grounded. I'm trying to figure out what we have talking raccoons now? What's going on? I was so happy when he went into, I am the only one of my kind. This happened to me, and this happened to me, and this happened to me. I was like, thank God they told us, and I don't have to just accept a talking, walking raccoon. But I can see your point of view. Like, these are comic book movies. We're going to do comic book stuff, guys. Let's go crazy.
Yeah, just go for it.
I see both sides. I see both points of view.
Yeah.
As always.
Going back to Nebula for a second, you could see she's sort of put together. She's sort of cyborg-y implants. And eventually, she seems like a loyal servant of Thanos and then Ronan through that. Then you eventually find out her true feelings of Thanos. Just like with the Collector and his slave, she's very resentful. He's sort of been the one who's taking her apart and putting her back together. So
yeah. His kids hate him, man. That says a lot about a character, too. Kids just hate him.
Yeah, I guess it's used to further explain how bad of a dude this guy is.
And she also loses an extremity at one point. I think she grows it backwards.
I think she deliberately leaves her hand behind. Probably because she knows she can get it back, or she has a backup or something.
It's part of the trend, though. It's part of the theme.
True.
Everybody lives in limbs.
This was a funny moment that I experienced watching it. When they're caught with the Ravagers and they need to convince them to work together towards the end with the Guardians, Yondu has his little arrow right up against Quill's throat where he whistles and the arrow goes. And he's like talking about, we know Ronan. I know his ships, his army. And then Gamora chimes in, and I could swear, I was watching this, she goes, his phone number? What? Did I hear the right phone number? They're talking about phone numbers? Who has a phone and a phone
number? Did she say that?
She said, he's vulnerable. But I had to replay it a few times. And I had Penny cracking up when I was reenacting this moment. She kept telling me to do it again and again. And I could swear it sounded like we've got his. It comes off that way, like she's adding on to what Star-Lord is saying.
Yeah, it makes sense. In my head, canon,
his army, his phone
number. That's what she says. From now on, in my memory, that will be what she says. But.
And it seems like also that's the one that's going to seal the deal. Okay, we got ships, we got army, and his phone number. His phone number. I'm in.
Okay. In that case, that's hilarious. That arrow was pretty nifty.
Yeah.
It took out a lot of other bad dudes in one swoop.
Another one of my nitpicks, because just like similar to Ronan in the dance off, he's whistling and it's going through the guys. It takes time to get through all those guys. Once it's gone through one or two guys, they've got blasters. Wouldn't they be like, shoot him, just shoot him. He's controlling this thing. He's killing our guys. Shoot him now. But
it's comic book logic, though. You got to, if you want your comic book logic, then you got to accept the crazy stuff.
Yeah.
It reminds me of when somebody's fighting a group, like we've talked about this before, somebody's fighting a group of bad guys and the bad guys come at them one at a time. Why are you coming at them one at a time? If you all went at them at the same time, you take them down. But no, you're going to go one at a time.
Yeah, definitely. That always seems to be kind of silly.
Logic, come on.
But from that, they work together. We see the real full formation of this team, this found family. It has that theme of that. And you see they have the classic slow motion walk toward the camera, all now finally united. We get a big space battle with the Ravagers and the Nova Corps against Ronan. So that's very Star Warsy stuff with the lasers blasting and everything.
Oh, yeah. all those really cool little star blasters, you just said, the little star-shaped ships that...
They form the shield, yeah.
Yeah, they sort of unite together and form a big shield. Very cool. Really liked it.
And this is something I didn't realize, but why would I? I wasn't looking at the time when I first saw it. But Ralph Ineson is a Ravager in there.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Crazy credits.
So, little background role, and now he just came back in a big way in the MCU. Yep. Really big way as Galactus.
Literally, a huge way.
So going back to repeat actors in these movies, yep. It was crazy to learn that he was in this, but for me, he's always going to be Galactus because he killed it, and that's a powerful role.
For sure.
Oh, but then in the final battle, they have this big blaster weapon and they shoot it at Ronan and it feels like it's going to end there. But then the smoke clears and he looks fine. This reminded me, I don't know if you have familiarity with this, but Dragon Ball Z.
No.
Harry watched that when we were younger and that felt like that was a thing that happened all the time there. They would go against the new big villain and they'd use all their power blasting away and it'd be a thing and they'd be like smiling to themselves and the smoke clears and they're like, huh? And they're shocked to see they're fine. And I feel that was a recurring thing. So it really reminded me of that.
You could really see it coming too, because I think somebody says something like, you got him, and I'm like, oh no, no they didn't. They wouldn't say you got him if they actually got him. That's, come on.
It's interesting. He kind of gives them their name. He says, behold, you're Guardians of the Galaxy, and I'm pretty sure that's the first time they're addressed as such, but then they claim it as their own. He's like, I think it's Rocket who's like they said, or no, maybe it's Star-Lord. We're the Guardians of the Galaxy. I think it's Star-Lord.
I think it is, yeah. Yeah, it starts out being the sarcastic. It's like the Goonies. It starts out being the sarcastic name, and they reclaim it. And
yeah, mocking them. Like, oh, look at how good of a job they did guarding you. Look at them. But then, like you said, they end up touching hands because they distract him with the dance-off. They blow apart his mallet, which leaves the stone up for grabs. Cool grabs it, and it's doing that thing where his face is all getting looking teared apart. Just like in space, kind of freaky when they're in the vacuum of space and his face is all getting white and stuff. When he saves Gamora, putting on his helmet on her before they're rescued by the Ravager. Taking them in, but then now the power stone, I guess I gave that away, but yeah, this is the power stone. This one is presents power, as if that wasn't evident, but yeah. This is the power stone.
Yeah,
he's holding it and he's holding the best he can, and then they chain link the Guardians and they're able to contain it and then send out a blast that vaporizes Ronan. So Ronan was able to handle it because at first he took it in before he smashes it into his hammer. So it shows he's strong enough. And now Quill, and then we find out later on they did a scan of his DNA and he's something else. So his mother, who we see brought back as a nice little flashback where it's like, take my hand. He's reliving that and he's reminded of that his mother's from Earth, his father's something else.
Right.
And also back to his mother, you could see again the ties to her and how important she was. When they are in prison and all their belongings are taken away, he will not leave without that wall. Walkman.
Yep.
Because that's so important to him.
Yes.
And at the very end, he finally opens the present from his mom. And there it is. Awesome mix volume 2. So now he's got a bunch of new tunes to check out. And he reads the note from her and it's very sweet. So he kind of is at peace with all of that and continues on with this new family.
Yeah, I loved it. A beautiful ending. Beautiful tie back to the mother's death, the beginning and the gift and all that. And him finally feeling strong enough to open it after the experiences he's had here. Love that.
So everything wraps up very nicely. He's moving on. We got more soundtrack to see what's on volume 2 past this. We'll see when we get to Guardians volume 2.
That's right.
But overall, it was a fun time. Fun sci-fi comedy romp. And there's drama in there and emotion in there. And you said from the get-go, you really like this one. So this is your very favorite of all of them so far?
This is my favorite. This is at the top of the list now. It hit all of the notes, like you just said. It's got comedy, sci-fi, action, emotion, 80s references. Everything I want to see in a movie was represented. And it didn't ask too much of me as a viewer, despite all of the new places and concepts that they introduced. Everything came together very smoothly. So this is a high bar for them to set. I'm going to be disappointed by everything that comes after this. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I'll tell you, James Gunn is at the helm of the next two volumes of Guardians. So
excellent.
They're going to feel very in the same vein and the same vibe. And if you liked what he did this time, you're probably going to like the other two as well. 3, I think, is a very strong entry. I really think 3 is like top tier MCU.
Nice.
So
stuff to look forward to.
Just to tease that. And speaking of tease, so in my document of what's in order, we're going to go back to the TV side of things.
Oh, okay.
Following up from her one shot, which almost was like a test pilot, Agent Carter got her own, if short-lived, show. So if we want, we could check out maybe the first 2 episodes and take it from there like we did with S.H.I.E.L.D.
Cool.
I think you're going to like it because you like Peggy, clearly.
I like Peggy. I love the one shot. This is a good premise, in my opinion, for a show. So let's check it out.
That's yeah, she's great. Actually going to be at this convention this coming weekend.
Nice.
So maybe I'll get a chance to meet her. I'm sure she's one of the top tier people there, and she'll probably have long lines and probably cost a bit to have a picture with. But
yep.
We'll see. We'll see.
That's how they make a living, right? It's really all about the convention.
Well, certain people, they still are active actors making plenty of money, but then this is extra. But then you've got some other people at these things where it's what they rely on. But we'll see if we end up going to that and maybe meeting her. But as for now, once again, Tavy, thank you for joining me on this journey. Glad you liked this one so much. It was fun discussing it. We will check back with Agent Carter. And until next time, thank you everyone for listening. Hope you subscribe if you're enjoying the show. And
leave us a good review.
Yes, subscribe.
Only leave us good reviews. If you didn't like it, you don't have to leave us a review. That's cool.
Yeah, just leave it alone if you didn't like it. We don't need it. We're just a young starting podcast, and we don't need any negativity.
We don't need negativity. We're all good vibes here. But thank you for listening.
Seriously, thank you for listening, and hope you'll like it, and you'll tune in next time. So until then, thank you so much, and we'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.
Zach and Tavy's Marvelous Adventure is produced and co-hosted by Zach Walliner and Tavy Phillips. Featuring Penny Walliner. Edited by Zach Walliner. Theme music by Luis Humanoid. Cover art by Chris Giarusso. If you enjoy our show, please be sure to leave a nice review and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. And follow us on all the major social media sites and apps at Zach Tavy Marvel. That's ZachTavieMarvel. Thanks again for tuning in. Nuff said.